Hey, my name is Howard Durking, and we're going to talk now about web optimization. In case you missed some of the events of this morning at Scott Hunter's talk, we had some laptop difficulties, but as you can see, we've got that working now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about web optimization. We'll see how fast we can get through the content without me talking so fast that nobody has any idea what I'm saying. And then if we have time left over at the end, maybe we can even jump back in and take a quick look at the membership services, the RESTful API for membership data. But let's go ahead and jump into optimization. You've probably seen some of the high-level tutorials from bundling and minification from various members of our team. What I want to do, though, with this conversation is we're gonna go a little bit off of the sort of beaten path of what we've talked about so far for the web optimization framework. We'll spend just a couple minutes making sure that everybody's on the same page with what is it. We'll go through those core scenarios that you've probably seen. In case you happen to be somebody who hasn't seen them, I don't want to leave you with a whole lot of detail and not a lot of practical guidance on how to get started. But then we'll go deeper into the mechanics of how the framework actually processes requests, and I'll tell you some just tidbits of information that might give you a little bit more insight into why is this working this way or things like that. We'll then talk about the extension points. I think really the only extension point that we've talked about like on the blogs and things like that are really the idea of a bundle transform. And to be clear, that's probably the single most important one, and so we'll review that again. But then there are a few additional extension points in the framework, and we'll go through those and see how you can use them to really tailor the behavior of what goes into a bundle, how it is ordered, things like that. We'll then look at WebGrease. Now, I've seen a lot of questions on Stack Overflow and on blogs, you know, hey, wait, I installed this package, and now I've got this thing called WebGrease, and what is that? We'll talk about that, and even though it's not a part of the core scenarios for the optimization framework right now, the NuGet package for WebGrease has a little extra, a little bonus, and we'll talk about what that is and how we can use it. And then I'll give you a little insight into what we're planning for the next version. Like everybody said, I'll kind of reiterate this, the awesome theme that web optimization, like pretty much everything else in the web stack, is delivered with NuGet, which means that we can release much, much more frequently than a sort of traditional Visual Studio kind of cycle. So we've got a lot of stuff planned. Our plan is to get stuff out to you as quick as possible to get your feedback, and then iterate as fast as possible, pushing things up to NuGet. So web optimization, just again, high-level definitions. When we talk about it from our framework, we're really talking about two things. We're talking about bundling, which is making fewer HTTP requests. That's really the goal of bundling. And then minification, which is really making the requests that you do make, we want to make them smaller. And so you can see a couple statistics there about just various sort of aggregate numbers of websites and what you could expect in terms of performance improvements from bundling and minification. And then if you haven't read Steve Soder's, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, so Steve, if you ever see this, I apologize. But this is really the sort of canon of where a lot of these techniques became popular. There are actually two of these books. There's a High Performance Websites, and then there's a even more version of the book, or another book that gives more techniques into optimizing websites. So the core scenarios, just to recap, these are the things that you've probably seen, and so we'll go through, basically we'll just look at them and then just jump straight into code so you can see them in action. So declaring bundles, we do this by saying what's in the bundle, what the bundle's virtual path is, those sorts of details. Bundle consumption, which is how we declare inside of our views that the bundle framework needs to render a script or a link tag, and what some of the behavior is around that. There's this debug release feature that we added in, I believe in RC. And that basically enables you to have different behavior depending on whether you're debugging or you're releasing. And you can see I've got in parentheses this optimization mode. And that's because debug release is just one way. It's our default way. But it's really just one way to toggle whether optimizations are turned on or off. And we'll go through how to control that with more granularity in just a second. Versioning, you've probably noticed that when optimizations are enabled, you have this big long number that's appended as a query string parameter. We'll look at what that is and just sort of see it in action. And then CDN. Now, if you guys follow me on my blog, you'll notice that I had done a blog post about web optimization, and somebody had mentioned something in the comments about CDN, and I said, oh, you just do this. And they said, wait, I don't see those members. And I said, well, that's considered a preview. And so what I'm showing you today is actually the final bits, and so we can actually look at it in a more concrete way than simply a comment on my blog in terms of how to enable CDN. So enough slides, let's just go ahead and jump in. Now I have, you know, like every good presentation, I have my backup solution that I know works, or at least it did an hour ago, but we're going to be adventuresome, and we're just going to start with a brand new MVC4 web application. We'll go with internet application. And again, we'll just sort of take a look at the sort of fundamental mechanics. So if you look at global ASAX, you can see that there's a bunch of calls to these specialized sort of wire up or configuration files. So you can see that there's one to routes, there's one to bundles, there's one to, you know, filters, and so on and so forth. So really, when application starts called, we make this call out to bundleconfig.registerBundles, and that's really where all of the bundle configuration declaration, where all of that code lives. So we'll go over here to bundleconfig, and we'll just take a look at what's in there. So you can see we've got this this bundle collection that's passed in, and if we go back and look at global ASAX, you can see that this is really just passing, just like with routes, it's passing this singleton instance of a bundle collection through bundletable.bundles. So if we go over here to bundle config, you can see that all we're doing here is we're simply adding to it. And you can see we're adding instances of script bundle, or you can see down here, style bundle. And one thing I want to point out here, so that there's just no mystery, script bundle and style bundle are really just convenience types. In fact, if you look at the code, I think there's maybe five lines. All these things are types that derive from bundle and add a default transform. And the default transform, in this case, is either the CSS minifier, our default CSS minifier, which again, you know, reduces white space, shortens variable names, things like that, for either CSS or JavaScript. There's no reason that you cannot create a bundle directly, and in fact, one thing that you'll notice is that if you or when you decide to use your own custom bundle transforms, you'll need to drop down to bundle in order to wire those in. Another thing I want to point out, if we take a look at unobtrusive, you can include files using this sort of glob, this glob pattern matching style. so it's not just individual files, you can include entire, you know, sort of file sets via these patterns. And you're probably looking at this saying, well, wait a second, what is this version moniker? So the problem is if you did, it's actually more prevalent up here, if I simply said jQuery-star, not only would I capture jQuery 1.7.2, but I would also capture jQuery UI and anything that used that same naming convention. So we have this special version moniker that enables us to capture, still using a sort of wild card-ish syntax, capturing multiple versions of jQuery so that you're not having to update this file every time you update jQuery. But at the same time, it's restrictive enough so that it doesn't over-capture and get into capturing jQuery UI and all of those other unrelated files. In case you're wondering, we actually don't do anything with the token. It's literally there just to constrain the capture itself. And we took this approach because, you know, one of the popular alternatives is to have you specify a regular expression. And we were told by more than a few people that it may not be a user-friendly experience to require that you specify your own regular expression. So I hope that resonates. So that is how we register bundles. We can then go to how bundles are consumed. So the best place to see that is if we actually go to shared layout, and I'll adjust my font size here. And you can see that we have this styles.render and scripts.render. Now again, these are sort of shorthand methods, and basically what they do is you pass in a virtual path to a bundle, and that virtual path, just to go back, is declared up here. So it's the very first parameter when you declare the bundle. another thing to point out is that this is actually a params array. So as you can see from IntelliSense, I can pass multiple of these things, which I'll do as we move forward a bit. And then ultimately, when you run the application, let's just go ahead and do that. What you can see, I'll run over here to network and start capturing. When this guy loads, we can go over here to HTML, and of course we can see that it generated the appropriate link. Now, let's assume for a moment that we want to take advantage of HTML5's async. And for whatever reason, we decide that we want to do this using our modernizer bundle. Now, there's a problem with this approach. And that is, you can probably tell, you're giving up control of the markup in order to use this method. Now, on the flip side, you gain the ability to do optimization toggling or debug and release support. And we'll talk about that just right after that. But let's say for a second that I want fine-grained control over this, over how the modernizer script tag is generated. So I'm going to say script source equals, we'll come back to that. But the reason I want to do it is because I want to add this async, right? So we have, scripts has another helper method called URL. So I can say scripts.url. And let's just copy this same reference and place it here. And then let's comment this guy out. So when we run this again, this shouldn't be terribly surprising. We'll be able to see that, where is it? Right. So we can see here that our bundle was still generated, or our reference to our bundle in the sense of the URL was still generated. It, in fact, includes the versioning token even. But I still have that fine-grained control over my markup and was able to include the async attribute. Although, as you can see, it actually tried to put an empty value in there. So it looks like we may have something to improve upon in the next rev. All right. We'll just backtrack this guy. Okay. So, like I just said a second ago, using scripts.url gives you that fine-grained control over the markup, but what you lose is the ability to have debug release support. So let's examine that a little bit more carefully. So by default, what you can see here when I run this, what we can see looking at the network, we'll just we'll start capturing, and then we'll probably do a hard refresh. No, this will be fine. It's all 304s, but you can get the idea. What happens is, by default, when you're in debug mode, we don't bundle the contents and we don't minify them. And the reason is, of course, so that you can step through them, and so that you're not having to work with some kind of a giant JavaScript or CSS file, that you can work with things sort of in their individual components. This is especially true for things like jQuery UI CSS files, where if we look back at bundle config, you can see that there are a lot of these. And this is a good thing, especially when we're developing, because otherwise we just get this, you know, thousands of line long file, and it's a real pain to work with. So what we wanted to do was support this experience where when you're debugging, you get this experience, unbundled, unminified, and then with a simple toggle, you can get bundling and minification turned on, and that is reflected in the links that are emitted, again, through these view helpers. And so scripts.render and styles.render are really what enables this on the consumption side. When you're using scripts.render or styles.render and you have optimizations turned off, it will emit multiple links for all of the contents of a bundle. Conversely, when you are in optimizations mode, it will render a link to the entire bundle, including the version stamp, and processes all of the bundle transforms. So we'll just take a look at what is the sort of default, because like I said, we have a default experience, and then you can override that. So let's just go into web config here. And I will up the font here as well. All right. If we go into system.web, let's see, where is my debug? All right, well, we will just add it. Where is it? Compilation. Debug equals false. All right. So we're going to set this to effectively release mode, and let's run it again. And we'll take a look at network again. We'll go ahead and start capturing it. Okay. Is it there and I just didn't see it? Okay, well, by default, turning on or saying debug equal false should cause optimizations to be turned on. However, in the event that that doesn't work, what we can do is we can actually have more finely grained control over that. And I'm going to just get rid of this. By going into bundle config here, and we can actually just set this in code. So what we'll do is we'll say bundle table dot enable optimizations equals true. And let's take a look. We'll let this come up, and then we will run it. Oh, there we go. So it all came up. And what you can see now is that we're actually referencing the bundles. They do have a version stamp, as well as if we take a look at any one of these things, if we look at the response body, you can see that it's also now been minified. And so this is, and actually I find just in my own development, this technique to be a good bit more helpful than trying to use debug and release. And the reason is because a lot of times, even when you're debugging, you want to debug with optimizations turned on. And so this gives you the ability to do that. All right. So you notice that we have this version stamp. Actually, you know what? We'll come back to versioning. Let's take a look at CDN. So another one of the settings that you can now, well, that you can control here in bundle config and that you now are able to take advantage of is a CDN path for an individual bundle. So there's a couple steps to making this work. The first is to say bundles.useCDN. So we need to set that equal to true. And then we need to provide the CDN fallback path. And, or not fallback path, but the CDN file path. And so that path is actually specified as the second parameter here. So we're going to go ahead and specify a string here. And then I am going to copy this because there is a high probability that if I tried to type that while I'm talking to you, I would mistype something and something would go terribly, horribly wrong with the universe. So what we're going to do now, we're saying enable optimizations true. So there's three conditions for CDN being turned on, or the CDN path being used, I should say. The first is that we have enable optimizations equal to true. The second is that we have use CDN equal to true. And the third, of course, is that we actually have a CDN path to follow. So when we run this now, we should see. Go, go, go. Yes. So what we can see now is that we actually did use jQuery from the CDN and not from our local store. Now, if we were to go back and even let's just say that all we want to do is say enable optimizations equal to false, and this holds true for any one of these conditions. And we run it again. Then as soon as this loads, you can see now we're pulling jQuery again from disk. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about versioning again. So we're going to say use CDN false because I don't want to, I had that surprise me earlier where, wait, why isn't my, oh, right. So we're going to go ahead and say CDN false for the rest of these sort of illustrations. And we're going to put enable optimizations to true again because I want to look at the versioning path or the versioning moniker and then how it interacts with the browser. So let's go ahead and run this. And what we'll see here is much like what we've been seeing, and that is that we get our resources as, you know, we get our bundle resources. They have this this version parameter attached to them. And one of the other things that may not be just obvious on the surface is that if we look specifically at the response headers, let's see, you can see that we have a pretty long cache expiration. We expire a year from today. And the reason is because we have a unique HTTP resource, a unique URL, because that version parameter is actually a hash of the contents of the bundle. So we can effectively say that this piece of content in its current form as this URL never expires. It lives permanently. And the reason we can say that is because if any constituent piece of this bundle ever changes, then we will generate a new hash and create a new permanent resource that also never expires. So one of the things that is maybe less obvious is that when we add a bundle to our cache, because, and we'll talk a little bit more about cache in just a moment, one of the other things that we do is we add a cache dependency. So what we're going to do here, because this is all working just fine, let's actually grab the stamp here, the version stamp, for the request. We'll just copy that, and let's just drop it in a text file here, because we want to be able to compare. And then let's actually go back. So this is content CSS, which in our project is actually Let's see here. I don't want to stop the code that's running. So let's just go to Solution Explorer here. And let's actually open the file that that relates to. So that's content site CSS. Let me up the font size. And really, all I'm going to do here is I am going to create, I'm going to scroll to the very bottom here, and I'm going to create an additional selector. Let's see, where shall I create it? Oh, I don't know. Let's create something new here. Login page, and I don't know. We'll create it down here under footer. We can create it in footer. That's fine. And we'll call it Howard. And let's create a new selector here. Whoops. Don't care about that. All I wanted was its contents. All right. So I'm going to modify this CSS file. So I theoretically have changed the contents of this bundle. I'm going to save it. And I'm going to hard refresh this guy. And let's see. Yeah, that does look pretty promising. So if we look at this guy, and we'll just copy it so that we can compare it side by side. What we can see is as we predicted, right? By simply changing the contents of the bundle, we change the value of the hash, and we've effectively created a new permanent HTTP resource. And so we simply update the link in the view, and now we have another permanent resource. All right, let's pop back into slides for just a few seconds. Go ahead and stop this running. All right. So those are the sort of core scenarios for how optimization works. Let's talk a little bit about the mechanics. So when you install the Web Optimization NuGet package, one of the things that's in our assembly is a method that's flagged with pre-application start. And all that method does, so it runs before app start, before any of that, and its job is to use the web infrastructure's dynamic module utility to dynamically, hence the name, register an HTTP module, appropriately titled bundle module. And then the flow of, you know, transfers over to application start, which we already looked at in global ASAX, which calls bundle config register bundles, and that registers and configures all of the bundles that you're going to use into that static collection or statically maintained instance. Now there's some interesting nuance to the mechanics of when a request comes in. And I'll talk through some of those, and then there's a couple just interesting points. So the bundle module is set up to handle incoming requests, and basically the thing that the bundle module does is it checks to see if the request is for a bundle that's already been added to the bundle table through bundle config, right? If so, it remaps the request to its own bundle handler. So we have our own HTTP handler that can process the request, and the job of the module is to decide whether to remap the request into our handler. a couple tricks that exist in the bundle handler today. You should expect the logic to grow more sophisticated as the feature matures. But one of the things that we do is we return a 304 if there is a conditional GET header specified. And the reason is that if you send us that header, that means that you already have the resource cached. And so we don't even need to really bother doing a lot of further analysis on the request. So we simply return a 304. If we get that header, we return a 304. The next thing that we do is we check. So there's two levels of caching that we do. One is of course, the output cache. And actually, I'm going to backtrack for just a second and pop up to this bundle module piece. And that is to say that our module hooks into the post, basically the post cache handler. I think it's post request cache something something. But basically, what that says is that our module gives the output cache the first opportunity to respond. And so if it was found in the output cache, it's just sent straight down. It doesn't even hit our module. The second layer is we use the ASP.NET cache. And so here in the bundle handler, we check to see if there is a bundle response contained in the ASP.NET cache. And if so, we return it without trying to rebuild the bundle or do anything like that. Ah, just a quick question that came in. I'll just answer these as we go, so feel free to pop in. The question is, does bundling and minification apply to web forms as well as MVC? And the answer is yes, it absolutely does. In fact, we just recently completed a bunch of work to ensure that you can have a good experience in web forms working with bundles, even in the designer. So it's not, you know, originally bundling was very much focused on runtime, but what we found is, particularly when you're bundling CSS, that creates a pretty good problem with the web forms designer. And so we've actually added the functionality in to where web forms users get that benefit both at design time and runtime working with bundling. Good question. So is there any fallback support with bundles when using CDN? The answer, and I've got a slide later that talks about this. The answer today is no. It either you either render a CDN path or you don't. We don't have the notion of fallback like what, say, Script Manager has. That is actually planned for really that's next on our work list. Okay. So just continuing on a little bit. So we check the cache, we return the bundle response if it's in there. Otherwise, we generate the bundle and we return it. Now, a quick point to note about the cache, the ASP.NET cache. As you're experimenting with bundling and minification, and one of the things that you may notice is that it seems like your cache always has the bundle in it, even before the specific bundle has been returned to a request. And the reason for that is that the cache actually ends up getting populated when your view is processed. So if you follow the code paths to sort of where that cache gets updated, what you'll find is that the helper methods, scripts.render, styles.render, end up actually populating the bundle cache before the actual request to that bundle is made. So to sort of restate that, your cache will be populated simply by returning your initial view. Okay. So when you, in fact, do generate that bundle response, there are a bunch of things that happen. The first is, what you would probably expect, get all the files that have been specified for the bundle. We then filter that through an ignore list. This is one of those extensibility points which you may have seen sort of tangentially, but maybe haven't interacted with it directly. So we have this notion of an ignore list, which is actually configurable by optimization mode, debug release, right? We then also have this notion of a bundle orderer. So in the event that you include a sort of file matching pattern, but you need to still control the order of those files, you can interact with the bundle orderer. You can either create your own or you can tap into ours, and we'll actually do that in just a second. There's then this file extension replacements. And in a way similar to the ignore list, what this does is it says, if I want to support a debug convention, for example, and so at debug time I want to emit the link to jQuery version.debug.js, and then at release time, I want the full version or the min version. This is where you can control that sort of as new conventions come along, and we'll take a look at that. And then finally, we build the bundle content, which is to say, concatenate all the strings together, here's the separator, and then run the apply the appropriate bundle transforms that have been configured with the bundle. So, extension points. These have probably popped out from that last slide, but bundle transforms, these are, they can be minification, they can be really anything that transform the contents of a bundle to some other contents. And we'll look at a couple examples of that. Orderer, of course, is how you control ordering. Extension replacements, again, as you want to support new conventions and control what links get rendered for what optimization modes. And then ignore patterns, so which things should be ignored in which mode. All right, so let's get out of slides again, and let's start, let's take a look at some of these guys. All right, so forget about this CSS file. We'll get rid of webconfig. And I think we can probably do most of our work here in bundleconfig. All right, so let's start with the ignore list. So what I'm going to do is I am going to create, in my scripts folder, I'm going to create a new folder here called Howard. And I'm going to add a JavaScript file to that. And I'm going to just call it setup.js. And in this file, I'm going to do something really simple. I'm going to say, I'm going to create a namespace. So Howard equals Howard, or a new namespace object, or a new object that I'm going to use as namespace. And then I'm just going to say Howard name equals my name. Okay. Pretty straightforward. And you know what? Because I just want an incredible amount of flexibility, and I think that this thing would go great with jQuery, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to add it to the jQuery bundle. So I'm just going to say, I'm going to also add scripts, Howard, and then I'm just going to say star.js. Why not? So this will include my my setup.js file. That's no real big surprise. What I'm going to do now, though, is I'm going to add another JavaScript file, and I'm going to call it setup.documentation. In fact, let's just say that the new trendy standard for documentation conventions is to say documentation. Why not? And I'm going to copy that because there's no way I will remember that spelling. So I'm going to create that. And really what I'm going to have this be is I'm actually just going to have it be the exact same thing here, except I'm going to add docs. Okay. Now, if I were to run this, it would be no big surprise to you that once it loaded, I've got both of these JavaScript files. In fact, we can take a look down here at the bottom where jQuery is rendered. Oh, sorry, I've got optimizations turned on. So rather than look inside that and see this giant minified mess, let's actually just pop over here and turn optimizations off for a moment. And let's take a look at the content here. All right. So we'll pop down here to body. And now you can see that I've got my crazy documentation file here as well as my setup. So that's obviously not what I want. So what I can do here is I can simply add another ignore pattern. And so I will say bundles. I can do that by just referencing the bundle collection that was passed into my register bundles method. And we'll just say ignore list.ignore. And again, we can use this glob kind of pattern matching syntax. Whoa. Let's not do that. Let's just capture this one guy right here. So we'll say this.js. Now, one quick point here is that our glob syntax is very, very simple. It's not, you know, full Unix, you know, style, you know, capabilities that you would use with, say, ls. You get one asterisk. And that's it. So, but all that said, I specify it here, and let's just rerun. And let's just take a look. and make sure that it did what we think it should do. And it does. You can see I no longer have my crazy new documentation convention in the output. One other thing I do want to point out is that there is an overload here that enables you to control when this pattern should be ignored. So the default is always, but then you can also, if you just depending on your requirements, you can also set it to be when optimizations are enabled or when optimizations are disabled. But that's how you do ignore. Now, another thing that we can do here is ordering. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to add another file here, and we're going to call this display.js. All right, and what we're going to do here, we're just going to do a simple alert, and we're going to say Howard.name. All right, this is pretty straightforward. So let's just run this and see what happens. We should get an alert that should be popping up any second now. Oh, well, that's not good. Why is that? So let's actually just continue. And let's see if there are any clues here. Ah, this might have something to do with it. Display is using JavaScript objects that are actually set up in our setup.js. So let's actually go in and modify just how ordering is done here. And so what we can do here, we're gonna tap into the existing bundle orderer that ships in the framework. And this is, I think, generally more the way that you want to go about this as opposed to writing your own bundle orderer, because we already include certain sort of known ordering conventions for things like jQuery and jQuery UI and Modernizer and some of these things. So the sort of preferred pattern is to add to the default rather than to start from scratch, but certainly if you want to create your own iBundle orderer, you can do that as well. So what we're going to do here, we're going to create a new bundle file set ordering. And we'll just give it a name of Howard. And let's just add the files in the right order. So we'll say fs.files. New would probably help, wouldn't it? Alrighty. And we'll say files.add. And now you can see that the syntax for this is not nearly as fluent or fluid as including items to the bundle. You should expect that to mature along with the feature. But for right now, it's this will do. Our requirements are pretty simple. So we're going to say we want setup.js to run first, and then let's go ahead and add display. Okay, and then really all we got to do is say bundles.files file set order list. Where is that? Bundles.file set order list. And let's do this. Let's actually insert. At the first position. Now, what this is actually going to do, this is actually going to ensure that our new bundle file set ordering appears at the first of everything. So this will actually help us to get in front of even jQuery. So let's run this guy again. And knock on wood that it does what, hey, it does what it's supposed to do. So you can now see that the individual files ran in the order that that they were supposed to. And if we look down here, you can actually see that setup and display actually get rendered before jQuery. So that's how you can control file set ordering. And let's see. All right. So the final thing here is, let's say that we want to support a new convention, kind of like what we did for documentation, that we want to support a new convention for debug files. So let's do this. Let's add one more JavaScript file here. Let's go add new JavaScript file, and let's call this setup.dbg. .js. And let's just actually copy over this guy. And we'll just to prove that we're not doing any sort of sleight of hand, we'll just call this dbg. All right. So what we're going to do here is we're going to go back over, because what we want is when optimizations are disabled, we want to use this dbg file. And when optimizations are enabled, we want to actually use this, you know, our setup.js. So what we're going to do for this is we're just going to say again bundles.file extension replacement list, and we're going to add dbg. And like I mentioned earlier, let's actually say when optimization mode is when it's disabled. All right, and let's run this. And so hopefully what we should see is our alert. Will give us dbg because optimizations are disabled. And then let's actually go true here and let's run it again. And let's see what happens. In theory, we should just get my name without the dbg string attached to the end of it. And as you can see, that is exactly what happens. All right, so those are three extension points that you may not have worked with in the past. Let's talk for just a quick second about one that you may have, and that is bundle transforms. So we, by default, use bundle transforms for our minification engines. So for CSS, we plug in our CSS minifier. For JS, we plug in our JS minifier. But bundle transforms are actually very, very generic, and you can use them for anything. So as an example here, we want to use less, because less CSS is good CSS. So what we're going to do is, I don't know why I'm clicking on that, let's go to NuGet packages, and let's actually add dot less. Whoops. Oh, perfect. Let's actually just add that to our project. Perfect. And then let's go over to what we're going to do. We'll just create it in the same file. We're going to create a new bundle transform. And because I wasn't sure what time was going to look like, I actually have it ready. But as I think you'll see from the code, it's small enough that really it's not like I'm doing this because it's super complicated. It's just because it's less typing, and less typing is good. So we have a single interface here, bundle transform, and a single method, which is process. And so here we're just calling into .less core. We're parsing the response, and we're setting the value back. And then you can see we're also setting the content type. So what I can do over here then is I'm just going to, just from my top level, I'm going to create a folder here, and I'm going to call it less. And then I'm going to actually just add in an existing less file. I'm going to add an existing less file that really I just downloaded from the less website. So it's this guy. And as you can see, this is just using a variable, and really that's all there is to it. So you can see I now have my less sample in here. And let's just create a bundle. Now, I mentioned earlier, let's make sure this builds. It does. This is good. We're making progress. I mentioned earlier that style bundle and script bundle are great, but a lot of times when you want to do something like custom bundle transforms, you need to drop down to bundle. So that's what we're going to do here. So we're going to say we're going to create a new less bundle, and we're just going to say new bundle, right? Now we need to give it the virtual path that it'll exist under. So let's just say bundles less. seems like a decent name. And then we have a params array of all of the different transforms. So we have these transforms, we can chain them together. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to say new less transform, and then I want to follow that with our new with a new CSS minify transform as well. And then really all I need to do here, is I'm going to say include, and I'm going to give it a virtual path of less, and then I'm just going to do star.less. Okay? So let's see. Oh, looks like I need a closing brace here. So now I've declared my less bundle. I've chained together bundle transforms. The only thing I have left to do is really reference it. So I'm going to go back in here, and I'm just going to do styles.render. I'm going to use this helper method. And I'm just going to reference bundles.less. And that's all I should have to do. So let's just go back and take a look at our bundle config. Let's see, do we have optimizations are enabled? And let's just run this to see what we got. So I'm going to go over here to network and see if I hit capture in time. Maybe I'll get lucky here. Oh, it's good. We have our alert box. Bundles less, could not find it. Oh, you know why? Because I forgot one important step. And you're probably sitting there watching it going, ah, you idiot, you forgot to add it to the bundle table. So say bundles.add less bundle. Okay, let's try that again. So going network. Oh, start capturing. Let's see what we got here. Hopefully something other than a 404. An alert, always nice. We get a 200. And when we look at the response body, what you can see is there's no less variable anymore, right? So we actually have valid CSS, and you can see it's actually been minified as well. So we have no white space and all of that good stuff. So that's a custom bundle transform. That's how you chain them together. And that's bundle transforms. All right, so let's pop back into slides for just a second. Okay, WebGrease. Let's talk about that. WebGrease is the library that we use to do minification, both for JavaScript and CSS. What a lot of people don't necessarily know is that WebGrease is really the sort of next evolution of something that a lot of .NET developers already use for doing minification, and that's the AJAX Min library. And like AJAX Min, it's developed and it's maintained actually by MSN. They have a fairly large website where performance is pretty important. So important that they have this entire performance optimization team that, among other things, produces this WebGrease library. And we are very fortunate to be able to leverage the fruits of their labor. And by that, I mean we just use it. And so that's how optimization works. But even though it's not sort of one of the core scenarios that we talked about earlier, there's a bonus if you look within the WebGrease package that's installed. And that is, there is a command line executable for doing a whole bunch of stuff that even optimization, that our framework doesn't support at runtime at the moment. So it is the command line executable is installed in the tools folder of the WebGrease NuGet package. Now, this is for RTM. One of the things you may have noticed, it was in a different place in previous versions, but it will be in the tools folder. Another thing is that it had a bunch of dependency DLLs, not a bunch, but one or two, that have actually all been IL merged into a single standalone executable. So you don't need to worry about any sort of dependent files. Now, WebGrease core capabilities, you already know that it can do minification of JavaScript and CSS. Now, I have a parenthetical here for semantic minification of CSS, because another question that has come up more than a few times is, hey, why is this thing using Antler? If anybody doesn't know what Antler is, that's perfectly fine, because unless you write compilers, you usually don't care. But Antler is a parser generator, and WebGrease actually uses Antler as a part of being able to do a semantic analysis and minification on the syntax tree that gets generated for your CSS. It already provides a benefit, and I think as the team continues sort of evolving this semantic minification, we'll see that the compression that you can get with WebGrease is actually going to be far better than it's been with other libraries in the past. The other thing that the executable can do is it can do bundling, it can do image spriting, and it can do auto version naming, or similar to the version stamp that we're adding, the executable can actually just generate the file, just the static file name with the content hash. So let's actually just jump in and play with this. Now this is going way, you know, off the typical trail, primarily because none of this stuff is documented. You should expect to see that change pretty quickly. But use of the executable is not one of the core scenarios that's part of our framework right now. There are some blog posts that I've got in a little references slide if you are able to download this later. So what we're doing is pretty just sort of off the beaten path, but we're going to have fun with it, and hopefully it'll even work beautifully. Let's see here. I'm going to guess here that the font size could stand to be bigger. So I'm going to kick this up a notch. Let's see here. Let's go to here. Let's do this. All right. Hopefully that'll be sufficiently large. All right. So what we can see, and I'm just going to pop open this folder so that you can see what we're looking at here. We're in this WG folder. This is where I've copied the executable, and we're going to do a couple things. So the first thing we're going to do is an input. You can see I've copied over jQuery validate unobtrusive. And if we look at it, you know, it's the unminified version of it. And so really all we want to do is we want to use the executable to minify it. So what you'll see is if we just run it, you can see that there's a bunch of parameters sort of in the help that tell you how to use the thing. And the one that we want to do is this dash m. So generally it's WG, the operation that you want to perform, in and out. It seems fairly straightforward. So in this case, we want to do WG m and dash in, whoops, is equal to input, and then let's say jQuery dot validate dot unobtrusive dot js. And let's say that out should be output jQuery.validate.unobtrusive.min.js. So I think that is sufficient. Well, from the lack of an error, I'm hoping that is sufficient. So let's take a look. Ah, you can see it did produce a file. And you can see that it is, in fact, minified. And so let's see, we've got 5K from 17K. So that helps. So let's do something else. So let's take a look at minifying CSS. And we talked about this semantic CSS analysis. So let's actually look at this CSS file here. And there's some comments in the CSS to sort of help you see what this thing's going to do. So I have multiple div selectors, and you can see that because I'm analyzing these things, one of them is going to win, you know, the last one here, which is background white, is going to win over background blue. you know, the color white is going to win, you know, so on and so forth. So you can see this kind of is a nice little test of what should happen. Selectors that don't have any rules should be removed, and so on and so forth. So let's actually just run this. We're going to go back here and we're going to say WG, we're going to minify in should be input semantic compression, I believe is the name of the file, .css, and out should be output semantic compression .min.css. And let's take a quick look there. So go to output, and as you can see, it minified in the sense of getting rid of space, but it also took out, it greatly simplified the actual selectors and the rule sets that they contain. Okay, so that's just a taste of the, you know, semantic CSS compression that WG has. Let's take a look at bundling. So if we go back over here to input, you can see I have a folder called a bunch of JS files, and within them I appropriately have a bunch of JS files. And one of the first things that you should notice here is that if you just sort these things alphabetically, they're potentially in the wrong order. Of course, it depends on what functionality is within them, but potentially they're in the wrong order. But let's assume that they're not for a second, and I just want to do the simple thing. So I'm going to do wg.b for bundle. let's see here. So we will do in, let's see, is input, and we'll say a bunch of JS files. And output is a bunch of JS files .js. And let's see what we got here. So let's pop over to output, a bunch of JS files. And what you can see is that they were put together in a bundle, as you probably expected, based on just an alphabetical sort of how the files existed in that folder. So a bunch files JS of. So unless you are targeting, Pig Latin as far as your execution environment, you probably want to change the order of these things. And a way to control that with WebGrease is there's actually a manifest format. So if I go back over here to a bunch of JS files, let's take a look at this config. And this is a very simple configuration format. Let me boost the old font size. all we're doing here is we have, you know, of course, a WebGrease element, container element, and then we declare a JavaScript file set and give it the name of the output file. Now, on the command line, we're still going to pass in, sort of a base path, and this will be appended to that base path. So we're going to assemble files. That tells us that we want a bundle, and then we simply put the files in the correct order. So let's go back over, and what we're going to do is we're going to say wg.b, and then we're going to add our configuration file. So ./c is equal to input a bunch of JS files / sample.config, right? And then our input is going to be the same as it was. So input a bunch of JS files. And then output, and this is going to be a little bit different. Our output, we just want to specify the base path because our manifest specifies the actual file name. So we're just going to say output. Right? We run it. And now we can pop back over here to the output folder. And you can see I have a bunch of JS files from config. And you can see they are now in the correct order. A bunch of JS files. Those are a couple commands as far as just to get you started with WG-EXE. Like I said, if you can download the slides later, I imagine that the conference is going to provide those. If not, I'll certainly put them up to where you can get to them. There's a couple blog posts from the WebGrease team where they talk about this and actually go into more depth of how to use the executable. And I would expect even more posts as time goes on there. one thing I do want to point out about using the EXE is that it is a one command per one operation. So there's not a wg/bundle/minify/version stamp. You have to run the command for every operation that you want to do. So generally speaking, what you'll want to do is sort of write an overall CMD or some kind of a batch file to chain things together in the order that you want them. So just something to be aware of. All right. So one other word on CSS minification. Now this is back in web optimization. Semantic minification, as you saw, can be really, really powerful. But it's also really picky about what your CSS looks like. And as we did a lot of tests on just sort of various websites' CSS, we found that there was a lot of sort of really broken CSS out there, and there was a lot of CSS that is sort of in that gray area. And so we erred on the side of being conservative, and we actually used the older CSS minifier that you would find in Ajax Min just out of the box. But that's not to say that you can't hook up the WebGrease CSS minifier. In fact, it's actually really, really easy to do. And what I'm going to do, because we're starting to run a little bit short on time, so I'm just going to show you what that looks like. Let's just take a look here. All right, so all you have to do, you probably already know this, is create a bundle transform. And all you're doing there is you're wrapping it around the WebGrease CSS minifier, and then, of course, calling it. This makes it really, really easy to just roll it in to your CSS bundles. And the nice thing about having the executable is you can actually test the behavior before you just slam it in there and try and run it at runtime, right? It's a lot easier to have a command line error and fix it than it is to have your site break. And that's really why we sort of erred on the side of caution there and chose to use the less powerful but also less picky CSS minifier. All right. Oh, and the thing that I just showed you. Right. So the difference between old and new. Now, site.css from just the standard MVC template is not terribly exciting because it's only 14K to begin with. But as a percentage of baseline, you can see that the new CSS minifier definitely has improvements. So one of the things that I would definitely encourage you to try out is try running the executable on your existing CSS and just sort of see what kind of difference it can make. Naturally, also see if it breaks on your CSS before you try and do it at runtime. All right, so in the last couple minutes, I'll just talk at a high level about some of the things that we're planning next. We've talked about WebGrease executable, and that's a big theme for what we want to do. So we want to really integrate it even more deeply with the Visual Studio build experience. We want to tie into build targets to do static bundling and minification. We want to integrate with build errors and build warnings. We just want to have a really deep experience for build time bundling and minification. The next thing, as was very appropriately asked earlier, is we want to expand our CDN support to actually do something more sort of at parity with what Script Manager does and provide CDN fallback, not just CDN address or URL rendering. image spriting is another. In fact, image spriting is one of those areas where if you can do it, that actually can have a profound impact on the performance of your site. WebGrease already supports it built in. We want to see how we can leverage it in our framework to, again, just provide it as this sort of deep but out-of-the-box experience. And then just more controls, more extension points, making the extension points that we have easier and sort of more intuitive to work with. So just the sort of ongoing maturing and improving of our own API. So that's really all the content that I have for you today. It looks like I came within 5 minutes, so There you go. If you have questions, this is the hashtag to use, and we can address some of those. So yeah, that's what I got. And then, like I said, actually, for references, we've got a couple blog links, a couple more things on WebGrease executable that you can follow out of band. So yeah, doesn't look like there are any questions. So if the good folks in Channel 9 are ready to pull the plug, then I will say adios and thanks a lot.